from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland has been producing beautiful quilts and teaching the craft for more than 15 years. Recently, the guild turned its attention to creating quilts that tell the stories of its hometown. The results are dramatic works that recall themes as varied as the Oakland firestorm of 1991, fog on Lake Merritt, and police brutality. Forum talks to members of the Guild about the African-American community's tradition of quilting and its current exhibit, Neighborhoods Coming Together, Quilts Around Oakland. That's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Quilt makers often tell stories with their creations, and for the members of the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland, the story they are telling is a big, complex one, the story of Oakland. The group's quilts are being displayed at several locations in Oakland as part of their show, Neighborhoods Coming Together, Quilts Around Oakland, and you can see some of these amazing creations on our website as we talk this hour to women of the Guild, and there are three of them here in studio with us, and one by phone. Let me introduce you. Marion Coleman is here. She's a professional quilter and a member of the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland, a retired social worker, and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Fran Porter, a member also of the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
And I want to welcome as well here in studio with us Marie DePores Taylor, who is president of the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Pat Turner, who's joining us by phone this morning, professor of African American Studies and World Arts and Cultures at UCLA, author of Crafted Lives, Stories and Studies of African American Quilters. He's also a member of the Guild. And welcome, Pat Turner.
Great to be here.
Good to have you here. I'm going to begin with Marion Coleman here in studio and begin with you, because you're from a family of quilters. And back in the day, I suppose the way things were done were made your own clothes, made your own blankets, all of that. Let's talk about how this turned into what it is now, artwork.
Well, this is true. I am from a family of quilters, and I'm happy to say that I have a great aunt who's 106. She was 106 last week. But anyway, happy birthday to her. She was an inspiration to me, and she helped me really get on the road to making story quilts because I asked her for images and stories about my family when my mother turned 70. So from there to now, it's been a steady journey of telling stories and learning about quilt techniques and that type of thing.
Well, in your storytelling, and these are linked, of course, to Oakland, you brought once alive onto the quilt the Berkeley and Oakland fires of 1991, fires up in the hills, and actually stitched the flame. I mean, this is a really compelling quilt that you've done here. But we should mention that these quilts cover extraordinary range.
Yes.
General.
Yes, they do. We have more traditional quilts where there's piecework telling stories, and then we have more art type of quilts, and the Firestorm quilt is in that category. And I wanted to do that because we are experiencing drought, and I felt like some of those conditions might reappear. So I was really moved to do it, and I started to research it again.
Well, I've been moved by seeing these quilts, and I want to recommend our listeners go to our website, kqed.org/forum. You can look at the Firestorm quilt as well as a Welcome to Oakland quilt and one about the Oakland fog and one where some children have their hands up. We'll talk about that quilt specifically, but I'm just wondering about how you pass this on. I mean, this is, as you say, generational. You've got centenarian relatives who are quilters. I know that the Quilt Guild has one high school girl in it, I believe.
Yes, it does. Jamie Presley, yes. And she's been a member since she was in elementary school. So we've seen her grow up and see her quilts develop, too.
And you've gone into fourth grader classes, and you've wanted to keep quilting alive, gone out to Laney College and so forth. But this is a challenge, isn't it?
Well, I can say that the community is very receptive to this tradition and art form. Part of our mission with this project is to activate communities and grow interest in quilting. And so we've worked with all ages, including boys who love to quilt. I think it's just the idea of operating machinery. But they've been very receptive, and they're telling their own stories.
And if I can go to you, Fran Porter, what are you using more? Hands, machines, what?
I do machine quilting. I am not from a family of quilters, although I personally have sewed since I was 7 years old, having made my first dress at that age. I always thought that quilting was for, quote-unquote, old ladies. I had to acknowledge about 10 years ago that I, too, am an old lady. And so I began to quilt as a result of a friend of mine who brought a quilter, Joy Johnson, to St. Louis Bertrand Church during African American History Month, who volunteered to teach us to quilt. Well, at that time, I certainly wasn't ready because I wasn't an old lady. she returned a couple of years later, brought more quilts, and I suppose at that time I realized that, you know what, you really are. And so I began to quilt also. We had a quilt group at the church, and a year or so later, I did join the African American Quilt Guild, met these wonderful ladies, although Marie I've known for many years at St. Louis Bertrand Church.
Can I a gentleman is not supposed to ask a lady his age, but I do know how old you are, and I think you're kind of proud of your age, aren't you?
Well, I don't know if I'm exactly proud of it, but I'm very happy that I've reached this age. I'm 91.
And you do not, as I said to you before we went on the air, look anything like someone who has crossed that border of nonagenarianism. You have a very youthful look to you.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. But I do quilt. I was encouraged by Joy to not only quilt. This is before I joined the Guild, but also to display my work at the Alameda County Fair. And I thought, you know, I'm not ready for that. But I did enter a quilt, the Underground Railroad, which was a full-size quilt. I did not win, but I did learn a lot in terms of how other master quilters evaluated my work.
Sorry you didn't start earlier?
Not really. I had other activities I was involved with, but I've certainly immersed myself in it since I did start. I did not at that time, but the next year I entered a quilt, and this time, taking to heart the evaluation that I had received, I earned a first place, and I've really earned ribbons each year since then. Oh, once in a while I don't, but then I still take to heart the evaluations that I receive, and I just keep plugging away.
Congratulations on the first place victory and plugging away. I mean, when you say earned, I mean, this is not the easiest work when you're talking about quilting. Is it still true that you can't pass by a fabric store without going in?
There is no way in the world that, in my opinion, that a quilter can pass any fabric store no matter where we are. You go in and you are just hooked on some fabric that I must have this for a quilt. Whether or not we ever use it, we have to purchase some of it. And we do. We have a stash that you wouldn't believe.
Can I ask you about your piece? It's a graffiti piece.
My piece is a graffiti quilt. And I really thank Marion for encouraging me with that particular one because I do have three quilts during this year's exhibit. But the graffiti quilt, I'm both intrigued and I am repulsed by the amount of graffiti that I've observed, not only here in Oakland, but no matter where I've traveled, I see some graffiti. It mars other people's property. The flat wall, fence, gate, name it, becomes the graffiti artist's canvas. They use it. It's very expensive to clean. It really frustrates. And
some people think it's an art.
I think it's an art because my quilt is called Is Graffiti Art? It was not easy for me to do this because I was encouraged to write my own graffiti. And therein came the problem because I had to think of, okay, what am I going to say? And so I found a number of things. My very favorite one is, which I did Google graffiti on the Internet. And I came across a phrase, gray hair is God's graffiti. And, of course, having gray hair, that became my number one piece. And from there, it went on to various other activities. And because it's about Oakland, I have the A's, I have the Warriors, I have the Raider Nation. I even went back in my memory, because I've been an Oakland resident for many years, when we had a club on 7th Street in Oakland where my older brother played. And that was Slim Jenkins. And so I pulled out Slim Jenkins.
The memories just keep coming when you're doing this sort of thing.
It does. Right? Yeah. It does. But most of the time, my memory comes like 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I kept pencil and pen by the bed, and I would awaken and then do my jotting down. But
they ask politicians, what do you have to worry about getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning? Not quilters, but they're...
This quilter did.
This quilter did. Well, we're going to talk to another of your fellow quilters. Marie DePorres Taylor is with us as well. She's president, actually, of the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland. Grew up in L.A., though, yeah?
Yes.
So here you are representing Oakland, though, and representing it with some distinction as a former nun. I spent 35 years in a convent?
I did. Yeah. Yes, I did.
And now you are very much a part of this, shall we say, not only quilting world, but the secular world itself?
Yes. Most of my ministry as a sister was in Oakland. So I would say I've been in Oakland for over 45 years. So Oakland has become my home.
And you see beauty in Oakland.
I do. I love Oakland. I think that coming from Los Angeles, I always say to people that Oakland has a small town feel. Anywhere you go, I have found that as that play goes, 6 degrees of separation, there's less in Oakland. You can go into any room, and if you continue talking, you will know someone who knows someone. So I love that. Coming from Los Angeles, which is spread out, to come to Oakland and to feel at home wherever I go in Oakland has always been a thrilling thing for me.
And you're going to do I keep thinking maybe Mayor Schaaf listens to the program. She may be listening now and get excited hearing all this talk about Oakland.
Yes.
There is one thing, though, that we ought to highlight here, and I don't mean to put a downbeat thrust on this, but the quilting group and the work that you quilters do was written up in the New York Times, and there's been response. I mean, the quilts have been shown in New York and so forth, and now they're going to be shown in Oakland. But at first, there was some difficulty getting access in your hometown, wasn't there? Full access?
Yes. When we began this project over 2 years ago, the dream really of Marion, who is our quilt chair, we wanted to really do something challenging for our quilters, and that was to do a project that really focused on Oakland. Because we are the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland, we really said we had a commitment, although our quilters come from across the Bay Area, but we had a commitment to Oakland. And so as we were dreaming of where we wanted the quilts to go, we wanted it not just to be in one specific site on a specific weekend, but rather that the quilts really speak to all the neighborhoods of Oakland and a way that quilting touches all the neighborhoods. And so we really wanted to use as the linchpin of our project the Oakland Museum. And we got deaf ear. But we continued to press on. And it was a reporter from the New York Times who got in contact with us and began to follow our process of our quilts and the quilt making. And in turn, she fell in love with us and really decided to write this article for the arts section of the New York Times. And so there's a biblical saying.
The Oakland Museum got religion, I was thinking, maybe?
No. The Oakland religion, the Oakland Museum has not got religion. And the only thing I can say is that a prophet is not known in their own town.
Well,
so,
and
I guess it's the prophetess are not known in their own town.
Prophetesses as well. We may have some change of heart as a result of this program. Let's hope so. But in the meantime, I want to go to Pat Turner, who's a professor of African American Studies and World Arts and Cultures, author of Crafted Lives, Stories and Studies of African American Quilters, and also a member, but not a quilter, Pat Turner?
I'm a minimalist quilter. Marion works on me all the time to try to get me to use my hands for something other than writing, but it's an uphill battle with her.
Well, you know, we heard the Underground Railroad mentioned, and there was, of course, a lot of communication went on through the spirituals and through, the Underground Railroad was communicated, in fact, through the spirituals. There was a lot of communication during slavery times about when you decoded about, it was made through the quilts. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the most interesting kinds of stories that quilters have to deal with, and I talk about that a bit in my book. There's some evidence that perhaps on the Underground Railroad, one of the ways in which someone would tell a fugitive slave where the next safe house would be by saying that one's going to have a red quilt on the clothesline or on the fence, and that's how you know you'll be safe. There's another belief, unfortunately historians don't have a lot of evidence for it, that actual quilt blocks could be interpreted as maps and could be used to facilitate the route from the north to the south. And we don't have as much concrete evidence for that as we would like for it to be able to say it's true. The core underlying story behind that is that anyone who was a fugitive on the Underground Railroad, anyone who escaped from slavery in that environment, was an enormously resourceful person that knew how to interpret lots of natural and man-made clues and was helped along the way by abolitionists and people who also knew how to support someone in that effort. So that component of it is true, but we're less confident about the quilt story.
Well, this particular African American Quilt Guild of Oakland has as its mission continuing the tradition of quilting, which is a long tradition now, and also promoting fellowship and supporting quilting to a great degree, bringing it to public attention, which we're doing here today with the help of all of you here with us. I think it's also important to understand that a lot of the quilting certainly tries to bring into focus political issues. For example, let's talk a little bit with you, if we could, Pat Turner, about Ona Knowles, who lost a couple of sons to gun violence in Oakland and is a member of the Quilt Guild. And you may want to talk about the quilt that she's created.
Yeah, Ora, since the tragic deaths of her sons.
I'm sorry, Ora Knowles, yes.
Yeah, since the tragic deaths of her sons, has wanted to communicate to the world that each victim is an individual with a story and with a life. And she developed a project the year her first son died so that every victim of violence in Oakland had a quilt with their image on it. She made a bunch herself. She taught other people how to quilt doing this. And she displayed them in Sacramento at an annual victim rights rally. And in all of the years since the death of her first son, this has been a commitment and a passion that she has. She grew up in a quilting home herself.
She was a daughter of sharecroppers, I believe.
She was. Yeah. And so she came to this project with the sewing skill. She knew what she was doing. Because she has kept very involved with the politics of this, of course, when the Black Lives Matter movement started, she was front and center on that in Oakland, and her quilt that's in the exhibit talks about Black Justice Matters, and again, continuing her commitment to personalizing who these individuals are who are felled by violence.
She also channeled her grief into the quilting, I think, which needs to be noted, and it was a form of healing for her from what I've read. And talk, if you would, Pat Turner, a little bit about the fact that so much of this is storytelling. I mean, it's a tradition that goes way back for marginalized people, especially women, in this case, African-American women, to visualize their thoughts. In fact, I was reading about a woman, you can help me with her name here, a quilt historian, Carolyn...
Meslumi,
yeah.
Yeah.
She got the loom in her name, huh?
But she's actually an aeronautical engineer by training, right,
wow.
Marion? And she is the head, long-term head of the Women of Color Quilters Network. And she has had her goal for a couple of decades now, really, supporting women throughout the country, really throughout the world, who want to tell their stories through their quilts, get their quilts displayed, and enjoy a level of prominence for the art form that it is.
But I love what she said. She said, you know, that it's the first thing we were swaddled in at birth, and it's the last to touch our body after leaving this earthly realm.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a tradition, you know, Fran was talking earlier about the fact that she Googled graffiti when she was making her quilt. And, you know, Marion did research on the fire, and so many of Marion's quilts are driven by research. So amongst the first...
wait a minute, Marion, you're doing black cowboys now, in fact, aren't you?
Well, yes, I'm interested in black cowboys, too.
Yeah. The intellectual quilter is the handle that you have here because you're doing all this research. I'm sorry, Jan, I didn't mean to interrupt.
In that regard, necessarily. I mean, the first quilts that we really know about were either spiritual in nature. So Harriet Powers, a late 19th century African-American quilter, told Bible stories with her quilts that are now in the collections of the Smithsonian and the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. In the 20th century, over in Marin County, there was a biracial group in the 1950s that bemoaned the fact that they didn't know more about what was called Negro history in those days. There was Negro History Week. And they decided to do some research themselves, but instead of sharing it in written form, to make quilts. And they made one to abolitionist Frederick Douglass, and then the other to Harriet Tubman. But they came together to make these quilts in this process that they, as individuals, felt like their history books had completely ignored these individuals. Again, this is the 1950s. And they wanted to know more, and they thought that quilts would make a nice format. So,
well, it's also appropriate. We've just left Black History Month in February, which was established largely because of the birthdays of Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln, but we're talking really about black history when we're talking about African-American women making quilts, and it's a fascinating subject. Again, you can go on our website and see some of these quilts. We'd love to hear your responses and any questions and comments you have. You can join us now. Toll-free number is yours. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Welcome you joining the conversation. 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and put your questions or comments there, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQEDForum. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking with members of the African-American Quilt Guild of Oakland. They were written up in the New York Times, and four of them are here with us this hour and talking not only about this art form of quilting, but also about its history, particularly in relationship to African-Americans, also to the role it's played and it continues to play, at least in the work that the women who are with us today have done in telling stories about Oakland, which is their hometown. So we're talking about a lot of things here. I'd certainly like to hear some of our listeners weigh in on this, especially if you're a quilter or if you have some interest in finding out more about quilting. I should say that certainly for African-American women, and quilting obviously is not, I mean, quilting bees, it's something that goes back years and years ago to so many different ethnic groups and often marginalized people, but also, you know, you had your regular WASP types, I suppose you would call them, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who quilted as well. It's always been a way to express oneself artistically and in terms of feelings and emotions. And many of the African-American women learned in churches. And there may be certainly today better materials and new tools and methods, but and a different look, but it's still textiles and fabrics. And I'd like to hear, as I said, from some of you who have had some experience with quilting. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6777. We do welcome your involvement in the program, and you can join us at that number. And you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And let me remind you who's with us. We have Marion Coleman, Marie DePoras-Taylor, Fran Porter, and Patricia Pat Turner, all with us here from the Guild. And a lot of people are familiar with G's Bend quilts after the exhibit at the De Young a few years ago. Can we talk about that and maybe get some responses from some of our participants, our panelists here today? Marion?
Yes. Our Guild, we were very happy to participate in that process when the G's Bend quilters were in town, and they make what we consider improvisational quilts. That means that they are making the design as they go versus using a set pattern. So when they were at the De Young, the Guild, we were the human face. We did workshops on the floor of the De Young on Friday nights, pretty much like we were doing at the Oakland Museum recently, and gave people a chance to actually participate in the quilting process. There are the story quilts, so there are the improvisational quilts, and what we like for people to realize is that African-American quilters have many different styles, and they are moved by their own drummer, their own music, and that's what we like about it. The spirit of the quilter comes out in their work in many different ways, and you'll see that with what we're doing with this exhibit, too.
They are, Pat Turner, different in some, I mean, because I think it's important to emphasize that quilting, as I was indicating before, covers a lot of wide socioeconomic and educational backgrounds of so many women who do it. But African-American women quilters have a certain kind of distinctness about them?
You know, I think that may have been true, you know, at one point in history. But one of the things that you would see if you came to an African-American Quilt Guild meeting, at the end, people will bring in recently finished quilts. And I defy anyone to really be able to predict with certainty that the maker of the quilt is African-American or the quilt is African-American. And I should say that we are a diverse group. We're called the African American Quilt Guild of Oakland because of our commitment to that form. But we welcome members of all ethnicities and have members of all ethnicities and have had men in our guild as well. And some of our quilters prefer to do double wedding ring quilts or schoolhouse quilts with cotton fabrics and pastel colors that are just absolutely gorgeous. And then other people are doing art quilts, such as Marion's On the Fire or On the West. Other people will, one of the quilts that's in our show is someone's tribute to the healthcare social services places in Oakland that have been so helpful to various communities of color. People do baby quilts for the bed. So within our guild, which I think is emblematic of African-American quilters now in the 21st century, there's really a wide range of artistic productivity.
Yeah, there's a woman named Alice Beasley who makes quilts that really do look like paintings. Again, I would recommend that some of our listeners go to our website and see these quilts. They're on there. I'm looking also at a website comment from Ben who says, I hope by the time I'm 91, I'll be as amazing as your guest. He's talking about Fran Porter, who's here with us in the studio. I was wondering, do your guests make quilts solely for art purposes or for actual warmth? Also, do any of them do commission work?
Our guild members.
This is Marie DePoras-Taylor, yeah.
Our guild members do a variety of quilts. We have one of our guild members who always does quilts that are the size of queen's king-size beds because she uses them as gifts for her family, and she has a very extended family. We have others who are hand quilters and really do embellishment. So theirs, our projects are very small. We have some of our guild members who do commissions, but it's on an individual basis, and that's done by each guild member can choose whether they wish to sell their product. Many of our guild members really do them for family, as well as we have what's called a worthy cause project where we make quilts for a particular charity that we have committed our skills to. So there's a variety of ways of quilt that guild members utilize their quilts. Some, there's one group, we have a small group that does really non-traditional quilts that are small in size, and they challenge using different art mediums to make their quilts. So as Pat said, when you come to the guild meeting, you will see a variety at our show and tell time of the different skills. But the one thing that I always am in awe of is the variety of color. I think that with our guild, they burst most of our quilts, whether they're traditionally pieced, burst with color. You see color in every piece.
More color in African American quilts, perhaps, and maybe I've heard the argument they're more utilitarian. I'm thinking about a story by Alice Walker called Natural Use, which goes into this whole business about should you put them on a wall or should you have natural use for them. And the argument, I suppose, often is they should be used for natural needs. Let me actually bring a caller on. This is Lois from Piedmont joining us. Lois, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. Well, I'm just so happy to hear my friend Marion Coleman talking about the quilting program and the guild that you're in, and I'm the former chair of the African American Advisory Council at the Oakland Museum of California, and no one is more disappointed than I am that this didn't happen there. So I'm hoping that she'll hear it on NPR, and then we'll get to have a quilt exhibit there. And thank you all for all the work you do.
All right, and Lois, thank you. You can also send this tape to the people at the Oakland Museum or give them the link to it, and we'll go to more of your calls in just a moment. I'd like actually to have you, Fran Porter, talk about, especially since you said you waited till you were 80 before you decided to become a part of this guild. What about the communal aspects of being in a guild like this? I mean, the social organization and sharing your work together and so forth.
Well, I'm too, am a retired social worker. As a matter of fact, I was director of social services for Alameda County when I retired. Social workers are people-oriented. We thrive.
You're also supposed to have good hearts on the whole.
Well, we do.
Bleeding often, as they say.
We do. But I have a really wonderful relationship with all of the quilters in the guild. We do have one very active male with us. He's our historian and our photographer, and he does a great job of really enabling many of us who sometimes have a little difficulty in whatever we're doing, and he steps right up and gives you a hand in cutting out fabric or whatever you're about to do. But there's a great deal of relationship, fellowshipping going on, because not only do we just come and quilt, but we do a little bit of partying at the end when we are during the quilting. We're very careful not to get it on any of our work.
Partying? I know well, you're a dancer. I mean, you go dancing, but your husband doesn't go with you, right? Is that kind of partying?
You get all that information.
I get all this information. I'm privy to things you won't even believe. But
I line dance every Friday.
Do you do line dancing at the party?
I do line dance every Friday. I really don't necessarily know all of the dances, but I always say to all of the other members of the line dance group that, don't worry, you just keep dancing. I'll catch you.
Read an email here from Dean who says, way to marginalize WASP quilters. Quilting started as a practical solution for making bedspreads from scraps. It's evolved to an incredible art form. Please try not to put this craft form into some kind of crazy box just for marginalized people. It's a widespread practice. I hate hearing that. Nobody's trying to marginalize. I mean, I'm not trying to marginalize the marginalized here or anything like that. I think it's just that we're talking to African-American quilters. I was trying to say that there are quilters of all colors and quilters of all genders and so forth, and indeed the way it should be. Here's James, who writes, my mother is a quilter, and it comes from a tradition of providing a life-sustaining necessity, intertwining of hope and beauty and pride. We came from a very impoverished Latino background. And Sandy writes, this is a fascinating subject. Thanks so much for having these women on to share their stories. Having known Marion Coleman in her previous life, I'm amazed at the transformation from social worker at a regional center to this amazing, amazing artist. And it's not a particular surprise to hear the other quilters mention her name frequently, identifying her as a visionary, mentor, and friend. I am so, so impressed. So let's go to another of our calls. And Arlene is joining us. Arlene, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just, you know, I did a quilt one time for a boss where I asked everybody at the UCSF Child Care Development Center to do a quilt and just do anything they wanted. They all were, you know, not quilters, and they were really concerned with how it would work out and how they'd be able to do it. And I just said, you know, do what you want, use whatever form you want. And we put it all together, and it was just amazing how all the colors worked, how the themes worked, how you could feel the love for this person in each panel that was made. And then I was privy to a conversation where she was telling somebody about the quilt. She hung it in her office, and just I was just sitting there. I don't know if she knew I was there or not, but I heard her just talk about the warmth and what she felt coming from the quilt, you know, that she could feel everybody's stitches, and that it really was the best gift she ever had.
Well, we thank you, Arlene, for that. Appreciate hearing from you. Let me go back, if I may, Marie DePorres Taylor, to you. I understand you're in the process of making a quilt about the Black Catholic Church in Oakland. I'd like to hear from you a little bit about how is the Black Catholic Church in Oakland different from other Catholic churches, or is it?
Well, the Black Catholic Church in Oakland really was the center of the Black Catholic movement within the United States in the early 70s. Within the Catholic Church, right at the time of the Black Power movement, there was a real sense within the Catholic Church that the culture and the identity of African-American Catholics was not really visible. And an organizations began to come together, namely the National Black Catholic Clergy Caucus, the National Black Catholic Sisters Conference, and the National Black Catholic Seminarians Association. And they began to meet and talk about how to integrate Catholicism within the cultural acculturation of Black Catholics. And on the West Coast, Oakland became a center part of that movement. Most of the movement, of course, was in the East and in the South.
So how do you capture that in a quilt? Or do you?
You do. You tell the story of the beginnings of the Black Catholic movement in Oakland. So we talk about the first experience where Black Catholics came together and began to explore looking at images that were reflective of African Americans or of Black people. That one of the key images that I'm using is that of a picture that was the first time in Oakland that we saw the Blessed Mother, who was Black. Her features were Black. And for us, it was like, wow, you know, it was a way for us to identify, as well as to bring together people in the church who had been marginalized, especially in the South, where segregation in many of the churches, there was Black churches and then there were white churches. And then if a Black person went to a white church for Mass on a Sunday, they had to sit in the back pew or they had to sit in the balcony. And I think Fran also can speak to that as well. And so what my quilt is trying to say is that the Black Catholic movement within the West had one of its beginnings within Oakland, and I want to show and reflect that within that quilt of You're to tell the story of that.
Trying to bring history back, really, bring it and make it alive. And let me bring a caller into the conversation. Van, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. I'm probably the only person that's going to call in that'll say their first supervisor right out of college happened to be a quilt maker. His name was Chris Claudis. But I was the reason I called was the use issue came up just as I was thinking about my mom's quilt. It was her grandmother's quilt, and how I want to use it, but I also want to preserve it. So I came up with a decision to just use it for guests and special occasions.
This seems like a reasonable, pragmatic decision. Let's go back to that whole question, though, with you, Marion Coleman, about practical use versus art, decoration, whatever.
This is true. I wanted to comment about that. I have several bed quilts, and I am making one that I need to finish quilting. So we love quilts of all sizes and all designs. So, yes, they are still very practical. And I will say we also make quilted garments. So you often see people who may have jackets or things like that because we just love piecework and stitching.
Can we go back maybe to the politics in this with you, Pat Turner? I'm thinking about, I've seen these quilts, and I'm thinking particularly about one by a woman named Jackie Houston, where her 7-year-old grandson posed for the quilt, actually with his hands up. It's called Don't Shoot, Hands Up, Don't Shoot. And obviously conveys a lot of the fear that grandmothers have, mothers have, for their male children particularly when it comes to police and so forth. What kind of response do quilts like that have for the most part, or did that one have?
You know, sometimes quilts provoke a more visceral response than a photograph. Probably most of us have, unfortunately, in the past couple of years, seen photographs that embody what that quilt is representing, a frightened child, a child feeling very, very vulnerable only because of the texture of his hair and the color of his skin. But rendering that which we might see in a photograph, and so many people now only see photographs online, in a three-dimensional quilt out of fabric that's carefully chosen to represent the skin color, fabric carefully chosen to get the clothes, that can cause more contemplation on that social issue sometimes than a real photograph can.
I'm looking at some emails here I want to read. Dan writes, what about the role of the AIDS quilt in breaking down the stigma of AIDS? And it did have a preeminent role in that, a very central and important one. Here's Tyler who writes, my grandmother was always quilting when I was a child. In fact, she made a quilt for each of her 8 children and 20-plus grandchildren. I never thought to pick up the trade in my childhood, but I recently started to teach myself after the death of my father. I'm using his old shirts as the fabric for quilts that will be given to my mother and sister as mementos. My question for the panel is, how do they address space issues? I have a very small apartment, don't have the room to hand quilt on a loom. Can I machine quilt the layers together, or is there a way to hand quilt everything? There's somebody who wants some advice. Marion?
I am a machine quilter, so yes, I use a regular table, my regular sewing machine, and I add a card table on the side if I'm going to make something that's over 60 inches or so to help support the weight. But also people may use a small embroidery frame hoop to do hand quilting. So you don't really always have to have the large quilt frame. But many people in the past, including my great aunt, she just used her dining room table and she would put the frame over the table. So if you have a dining or kitchen table, you could use that and you'll just have to eat somewhere else until you get that quilt done.
It's interesting that listener referred to quilting as a trade. I mean, you hear a trade, an art, a craft. What fits? I mean, they all fit, I guess, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad we got some consensus on that. Yes. Here's Lisa, who says today's show seems very serendipitous in that I am currently on my way to the fabric store to buy fabric for my first quilting project. Thank you, ladies, for your inspiring quilts and your inspiring words. Any of you have some real strong tips for beginners?
Just enjoy the fabric. I think that looking
Marie
for
DeForest Taylor. Yeah.
I think looking for fabric really gives you ideas of what you're going to do. Touching the fabric, you know, seeing fabric that'll catch your eye and you say, "Oh, I'm going to use this." I think that to me is the thrilling part of the quilting process. And it many times
you're using your eye essentially.
Right? Yes, you're using your eye, you're using your feel, tactile to see, "Okay, does this fit the fabric, you know, the project that I want to do?" Looking at threads. Will this go with that thread? It's a very creative process that I have found is just going to the store and saying, okay, this is what I want. Even if you have a quilting pattern, you know, you can say, well, how do I want to portray this quilt? I don't have to use the same colors that this pattern says. What appeals to me?
Let me go to some more of our callers. And John, let's get you on. Thank you for waiting. Join us.
Thank you for having me. We have a small fabric import business, importing handmade batik from Indonesia, based in the East Bay, Oakland and San Leandro. And I'm calling to ask the ladies about their local charitable events around quilting, and we'd be happy to donate some sales samples and other fabric to their efforts.
We would be delighted to have your quilt samples for our Worthy Cause project. We are always looking for fabrics. Most of our Worthy Cause projects go to children. This year, we're doing it for children who have been abused. And to bring comfort to those children with the fabrics is something that would be a delight for all of us to sew on.
It's kind and certainly generous of you, John. And Judy Campbell, our producer, informs me that she got your number, so to speak, so we will give it to our guests. And thank you for your call. I appreciate that. Let's go to another caller, Ann, joining us from San Francisco. Ann, welcome.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and thank you to your guests for doing their beautiful work. Some years ago, I worked on an animated project where we learned a lot about the Harlem Renaissance, and it was in the style of the Harlem Renaissance. And the crazy quilt and the stories behind that and the superstition, and I wondered if anybody would talk about that. Things like, oh, no straight lines are allowed because evil can travel through a straight line and things like that. I wondered if your guests know anything about that.
Well, my guests in the studio are looking puzzled. Pat Turner, you're the scholar here. Can you help us?
The primary one is the one that your guest just cited about a straight line that I'm familiar with. Crazy quilts, you know, just that very label. Some people like need an additional explanation for why they're so unorthodox. If your listeners don't know, usually no two pieces of fabric are the same size. Textures that you would never put together or put together, you know, most quilters would never do a quilt with both velvet and cotton in it, and a crazy quilt will have velvet and cotton and corduroy all next to each other. So superstitions want an explanation for why something that violates all of the rules of conventional quilt making is applauded in that quilt.
And let me thank Ann for her call and thank Pat Turner for that explication and look at some more of your emails. Here's Bob who writes, my ex-wife's family has a tradition wherein a quilt is made whenever a baby is born. Each of the extended family groups, siblings, cousins, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, makes a patch that is representative of that group. The family story can be seen in these quilts, and they're cherished. Here's Susan who writes, remind and inform listeners. Well, this sounds like an order, doesn't it? Remind and inform listeners about the San Jose Quilt Museum at 520 South 1st Street. In San Jose. I attend a quilting class taught through Santa Clara Adult Education. Susan Jostrom is an excellent teacher who teaches all levels of quilters. Several of the class members make charity quilts for Valley Med Center. My grandmother was a quilter and part of a quilting circle in Missouri. It's a lot of history when you're talking about quilting, a lot of familial as well as general history. And here's Smith, who says, how do you encourage young artists to join and love quilting? That's a question I wanted to get to a little more before. So
I first want to say,
you had Marie DeForest Taylor, yeah.
One of the goals of the African American Quilt Guild is educating young and old on the real history and the art of quilting. And our main project every year is our Black History Month program that we do. And we finished, we had our program on this Saturday, the 28th, the 27th. And we had over, I would say, 70 new quilters who came to learn the art of quilting. We had over 20 young children, both boys and girls, who came to learn how to quilt to make their first 9-patch block. And it was a thrilling experience. We had fathers who brought their daughters, and the fathers learned how to make a block as well as their daughters. So one of our projects is really to allow to inform others and to teach others about quilting and the art of quilting.
Well, good luck with that. Indeed, it needs to be done. Marion, quickly, we're almost out of time here.
To acknowledge an organization, the California Alliance for Traditional Arts. They have been very supportive of us, and their mission is to continue the art form.
And my mission is to mention that the quilts are currently at Laney College, and they'll be on exhibit at the Joyce Gordon Gallery in Oakland later this week, with an opening reception on Friday night. Thank you so much. This has been most informative. I appreciate having all of you. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.